my boyfriend Ryan and I were out there. We actually camped right there where the cemetery is, like just within a few feet of it. And I took a photo. I was going to show my mom. I said, you know, look how big my tent is. And we got this big blown up bed and the whole left side of the tent, there's nothing in there because it's just that big. And I didn't have that much stuff. And if you look, you can clearly see the face of a child that has bangs staring out at you. And I can't explain that one. That is a really weird experience.
I think we've all been inside a little too long. So let's go out to the wilderness again. This time we're headed to what Utahns call the West Desert to explore one of the most iconic vestiges of the Old West, the Ghost Town. I'm Dory Peacock and this is the Ghost Box. I say the gold rush, you probably think of the California gold rush of 1859. Men in felt hats with beards panning for gold in the streams of the Sierras. But the California gold rush is far from the only one in the history of the West. Think of gold rushes less as an event and more as a tide that comes in and out. Gold is discovered, men rush in to take advantage of it, gold runs out. And the cycle repeats itself for years and years. In 1870, gold was discovered in a small settlement called Lewiston in the hills just west of Utah Lake. Over the next 3 years, prospectors would flock to the small town to get a piece of the precious ore. The increase in mining led to an even better silver boom. It's estimated that the town produced at least $1 million worth of silver. But the silver boom didn't last either. By 1880, the mines shut down and the town was abandoned. A new boom seemed around the corner when a German immigrant miner discovered cinnabar in the area. All right, geology time. Cinnabar is a red form of mercury. The cinnabar deposits in Lewiston were found to contain both gold and mercury. The miner filed a claim, which he called the Merker Claim, and in 1890 sold it to a group of speculators from Nebraska. There was just one problem. They couldn't get the gold out of the cinnabar. The traditional process of extracting gold ore didn't work on the mercury-filled stone in Lewiston. Lucky for them, a local druggist named Gilbert Payton had studied a new and yet unproven method of extracting gold from low-grade ore using cyanide. Within a year, Payton had proven that the cyanide process could work, and the Merker mine becomes the first commercially successful mining operation in the U.S. to use it. That's actually the process that's still used to extract gold from baser metals today. This led to another gold boom, and miners and craftsmen poured into the town once again. This time, they couldn't call it Lewiston, since that name was already taken by another Utah town, so they called it Merker after the name of the original claim. At its height, the town of Merker was home to 5,000 people. But this boom, too, was destined to go bust. In 1902, a fire destroyed most of the town. The citizens rebuilt, but not long after, the mines began to close. By 1960, there was only one building left in town, and by 1930, that was gone too. Today, all that's left is an open pit mine and a small cemetery of mostly unmarked grave. It's estimated about 100 people are buried there, and only about 40 of their graves are marked. Of those, about half are circled by little picket fences. If you've seen photos of the cemetery, that's what you've seen, the fences. In recent years, the cemetery has become more of a hotspot for ghost hunters.
It's kind of just like one of those few places that you can actually investigate a cemetery. It's become a favorite paranormal investigators in Utah all around.
This is Jen. She's a ghost hunter and psychic medium. Her daughter, Mary, is also a medium and investigator, and together they're known as the Paranormal Girls. You'll hear from both of them in this episode. They have investigated the Merkur area many times, and they've had encounters with its most well-known inhabitant, the ghost of a little girl called Emily.
There's several children, but there's one little girl's grave who seems to get all, like, people bring up toys, and they, Emily, and everyone puts toys on her grave and whatever else like that, and they kind of ignore some of the other little children's graves. And the reason why she is tends to be the most active. With that, when we do go up there with her, we do bring up toys and stuff, but we always put them on another child's grave, and we always ask them to share, you know what I mean, sort of thing. One time we had brought up some candy, and we had the spirit box running just kind of always in the background as we're up there, because we just like to have it going just for fun. And the spirit box we're using is Phasma Box mostly. And we love that one because it kind of takes out all the static and clutter that you hear through the other ones. So it's really nice, clear conversations that you can hear. And it was funny as we were laying out some candy and you could hear these kids, no, and a teddy bear, like it was this interactive teddy bear that lights up and they love him. And so we were putting him out, we were turning him on, and all of a sudden you hear these kids fighting on the spirit box. And me and Mary both turned around and said, "Hey, you need to share." At the same time, it was funny because we were both preschool teachers, so kind of like, just like, "You need to share."
Jesse, another member of Jen and Mary's team, witnessed the ghost child phenomena too.
So we had
an EMF detector or a...
Yes, an EMF detector on the ground. And Mary would start running like through the cemetery. And then all of a sudden you would see a light. She'd be by, not close enough where you'd pick up the text on like the EMF detector. And you would see a light standing like behind Mary, or the light would shine red on the opposite side of Mary. And she was a ways from the EMF meter, so what wouldn't have been her picking it up.
Okay, if you're new to the world of paranormal investigation, first of all, welcome. Second of all, allow me to explain the equipment the team is talking about. The spirit box is actually the piece of tech I named this podcast after. See how that works? It's essentially an AM radio that sweeps through every frequency very quickly. The theory is that it takes a ghost less energy to manipulate a radio wave to send a message rather than to speak with their ghost mouth in a voice the living can hear. Whenever I think of a ghost box, I sort of picture a ghost arranging sounds from various broadcasts into phrases, the way you might arrange magnets on a fridge to form a message for your college roommate. The rule with the spirit box is that unless you hear more than two words together, you're probably not hearing a ghost. An EMF detector is exactly what it says it is. EMF stands for electromagnetic field. Virtually everything that uses energy, including humans and animals, emit electromagnetic fields, and an EMF detector detects them. Most detectors have a needle or a series of lights on them that light up to show when a strong field is detected. It's not unlike a guitar tuner, at least that's what it reminds me of every time I've seen one. The theory is that ghosts must also emit EMFs. So if your detector is lighting up and you aren't near a strong source of energy, you may have just detected a ghost. There are a lot of things that can set off an EMF detector, so rule of thumb, you probably don't have a ghost unless the detector seems to communicate with you. Like if you ask it to make the detector light up and it does, then maybe a ghost. That's what happened in this story with the EMF detectors Jen and Mary were using in the cemetery. They were lighting up virtually on command. Now, the Merkur Cemetery is frightening enough on its own, but according to the Paranormal Girls, the cemetery ghosts aren't even the strangest thing out there.
Some of the unique things that we have loved about Merkur is it's got a different feel compared to where you're at. Cemetery itself, it's a very peaceful but paranormal active place to investigate. You get children's spirits to play with you, adults who have like sometimes things they just would like to talk about. And then once you leave the cemetery bounds, it changes. it becomes like a whole different like area to basically investigate because the field changes. Well, one of our first trips out there, we found, Mary did, actually, she found a portal.
This was not the first time I had heard of this portal, and I'm still wrapping my head around what it is. Jesse was the first one to tell me about it.
So the portal, from what I understand, is just kind of like almost like a gateway for other spirits and other things to come out of that, you know, come out of that portal. So, you know, you have your evil spirits and you have your good spirits, but it just seems like there's a bunch of different spirits that hang out there. And depending on what time you're there, it's worse. I guess it's worse. It feels worse than other times. That's by understanding what the portal is.
What's on the other side of the portal? Like, is it a portal to the next life? Is it a portal to heaven or hell? Has anyone ever said anything about that to you?
You know, I've never asked. I've never asked. That'd be a good question to know whether it is heaven or hell or the next life or if it's just a bunch of spirits hanging around. Yeah, I'm not sure. I've never asked that question.
I'm picturing in my mind like a Pokemon lure, but for spirits.
Yeah, that's like a battle.
Sort of like that. Like it's just kind of, they just get so much activity there. People go, well, there must be a portal here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's.
Jen explains the portal a little differently.
I would like to call this portal more of a, not like a spirit portal, or I should say spirit only for spirits to come through. I would almost call it a multi-dimensional intergalactic portal. And the reason why is because through all of our times, every time we've gone there, there's been something different in the portal area. Either it be human spirit, either it be fae, or I should say the unseelie, possible Bigfoot, and then other things. And, you know, just as a medium, every time we went out there, we'd learn more info. And yeah, that was to our best knowledge, but I would just call it like where it was used by pretty much everything in the area.
As Jen said, Mary was the first one to find the portal, and boy, did this portal make itself known.
So our very first trip out there, we were out there to see if we'd watched a video where someone said that there were skinwalkers out there. And I was like, I don't think so, but we wanted to go find out for ourselves. So we go out to Mercure. And the only thing I could pick up is, no, I can't pick up. I'm a psychic, by the way. And Mary is a psychic too. She's my daughter. And the only thing I could pick up out there was, do not go past the cemetery bounds. Do not go more, I would just call it south. I don't know which direction it really honestly was. I said, just don't go south. There's something out there that would push you off the cliff if it had an opportunity to do so. And Mary, being in her teenage years and with this other guy who was our cameraman, who was very enthralled with the paranormal, thought, oh, let's go do that. Let's not listen. Like, the medium on the team has one job, is to keep everyone safe. And when the medium says, hey, please don't go in this area, where did they go? They go in the direction I told them not to go. And I'll let Mary take over from there.
So we were walking and walking and walking with just the two of us, one flashlight and a spirit box. We were just going to keep walking until either something happened or we had gone too far and wanted to turn back. So we're walking through this large desert area with all these like desert trees, cactuses, all these sage bushes. And we kept walking until we came, we went down this dip, you go back up, you walk, and then you go a little bit to the right when we stumbled across this big open space. And in front of us was a trees that made almost a perfect circle. We thought that was super weird. So when we started to take another step forward, the spirit box finally started talking. We kept getting words like, they're here, our full names, our ages, personal information about us, and then followed by the words, get them, throw them off. And we thought that was weird. We were just kind of laughing and rolling our eyes. We didn't think much of it. We were like, oh my gosh, they're just trying to scare us. But we heard a noise behind us. It was like a really large scuffling through the trees noise. So we immediately turned around, started looking around with our flashlight, didn't see anything. So then we turned back around to look at the circle of trees when this 9 foot tall, almost black body with a white glowing faced creature started running after us with its arms out in the air. So we booked it. We immediately started running as fast as we could, but we didn't remember where we come from, and we could still hear like heavy breathing and large footsteps behind us as we're trying to run. The spirit box then started saying, "To the left, to the left." So we decided to trust it, and we went to the left, only to almost stumble across this large cliff that if we hadn't slowed down for just 1 second, we wouldn't have seen it and just ran off the cliff. So we turned around and we booked it the other way until we finally got back to the little fire that we were starting and back to the cemetery into the safety of its grounds.
We eventually went back out there several times to the circle of trees just to kind of see what's going on. We learned to call it the portal. And the reason why is because the perfect circle really did make like a portal.
The portal had more in mind for the paranormal girls. One fateful night, they were camping out at Merkur with their friend Jessie and another ghost hunter called Sarah. She's the one you heard at the beginning of the episode. This trip got off to a pretty weird start.
We decided to drive instead of walk up the hill because we were taking a bunch of stuff up. So we started driving up the hill and the SUV that we're in wouldn't make it. So we turned around and went back. But we could kind of feel this hard there, not that we could kind of feel like there was a presence there. Even at that time, my heart was beating really fast, and I was talking to them. I'm like, there's something following us. One of the guys that was with us goes, yeah, it's an evil spirit. Jen agreed and said, yeah, it's not a very friendly spirit, and it doesn't want us back, or we shouldn't have came back this way.
So when I feel it and sense it out as we were going there, it was a very heavy feeling. It was a feeling of ancientness in a way, like it was old. It was not human. At least I don't think it was human. I don't know what it would have been. I would just call it an entity. It wasn't any of the entities that we normally come across in our paranormal investigations, and we come across quite a few, so it was something different. How would you describe it, honey?
So when we encountered it for the first time, we had rounded this corner. We all felt this dark, deep energy that nobody had ever felt before. We all remarked to each other, like, whoa, what?
Yeah, we were just
going on.
We were just traveling along and everything was fine. And then bam, like it was just like, boom, like this energy just came for us.
And me and someone else in the car, Daniel, we had both looked to the side and we'd seen a tall, dark, almost like if you could see someone like muscular in the shadows. Felt very like powerful, almost like if you were to look at someone, you could tell they were the king. Like they were powerful in that way. Like you could almost godlike, I would say. It was definitely a different energy than anyone had ever felt before. And we had just passed it when you're coming around this corner. And we all started talking like, should we turn around? But we didn't turn around.
So we're trying to get back. And then all of a sudden the car just completely dies. No check engine lights on, no overheating, no nothing. The electrical just shuts down. So we're getting out and we're looking because there's rocks up there. So we're like, oh, I wonder if we hit something, maybe crack the oil pan, something. Nothing. Like the car was perfectly fine other than getting scratched up from the trees and stuff. But the car was completely fine. So we waited probably a good 5-10 minutes there. And we could still kind of got that uneasy feeling like we were being watched. And then we all decided, okay, well, let's get in the car and see what happens. See if it starts again. You know, it started once he cranked it over and we drove back down the hill. But that was kind of one of the times that I was pretty scared because I felt like my heart started beating really fast when we were up in that area. And it was just weird that the car just shut off by itself.
Later on that night, yeah, Jessie kept seeing things down by our trailer. Later on, when we did go down there and as we were sleeping, we did have some activity.
The paranormal girls, they usually take a camper down there and we camp. We do our investigating and all that stuff throughout the night and then have a camper down there so we can just sleep there and then take off the next day. Well, that night, that was my first night there. Our psychic medium, Jen, was saying, you know, there's a spirit here that doesn't want us here. Like, we're not welcome, because we're going to go back up to the top and do some more investigating. And she just got an uneasy feeling, and she said we shouldn't go back up there. Like, it's not, there's something waiting up there for us, and it's not a good spirit. So we went back down, and all of a sudden you just hear something hitting the camper, and it was, you know, pounding on the front door. And then you hear rocks, or what sounded like what had been rocks thrown at the other side of the trailer where the door's at. And then you'd hear more pounding on the side of the camper. And this happened for a good 3 to 4 minutes. We're like, okay, who's out there? Like, we're the only ones out there. There were no other cars around. So we get out and we walk around the camper, walk around the cars. Nobody's there.
Daniel was in his vehicle, and he said he kept seeing like this Indian guy with like two coins for eyes or something. It was weird.
Jesse also had a solo spooky experience.
We were up by the headstones just trying to see what kind of activity we would get from the spirits that were there. And Mary, who was with us, said that Sarah was on her way and asked if I would go down and get her because she's never been there. So I was like, yeah, that's fine. I'll walk down there and get her. And I mean, it's kind of a little steep little hill to get up to the gravesite and then walk down there and go get her. And at this point, I've never met Sarah. I've heard of her, but never met her. So I have no idea what she looks like or what she drives or anything like that. So I get down to the bottom, and there were our other vehicles there. So I just started saying, Sarah, where are you? And then I hear this, I'm over here. So then I start walking kind of across the street from where the camper was and the other cars were. And I walk around the cars and look, and there's nobody there. So I just once again say, Sarah, where are you? And again, I hear, I'm over here. And nobody was there. So I walked just to make sure, just to verify nobody was there. I walked around all the cars and walked around the camper that we had there, and nobody was around. So I'm like, this is odd. So then I go in the camper and I sit there and wait for about 5-10 minutes. And then a car pulls up, and I'm like, oh, that must be Sarah. So I go out, and I was like, hey, were you around here earlier? And she goes, no, I just got here. And I was like, oh, well, because I was calling your name, and I kept hearing the girl saying, I'm over here. And she said it a couple of times. And she goes, no, I was up here at the end of the road. So that's the first time I met Sarah.
So the gang is all assembled, camp is set up, and they head for the portal.
And so I was like, Sarah, you've got to come check out this portal area. I want to see what it shows to you. Because to Mary, she saw something different. I saw something else. And so we take her and Jesse, and Nate from Hidden Realms, and we start trooping out there.
It's kind of a big area. So we walked quite a ways. We went to where this portal's at, where I guess a lot of spirits hang out. I'm not a medium, so I don't really sense spirits that off that much, but I do every now and then feel like something's there. So we were at the portal. And then we stayed there for a little bit, and we were interacting with some Native American spirits, as well as some other spirit, another human.
We get out there, and we're sitting out there, and, you know, we have a spirit box on, but we're seeing like these little, like, I would almost call it like sparkles as we're sitting in the middle of the portal. The portal felt a lot more calm. It did feel powerful, but it didn't feel like negative. And as we sat there inside the portal, we see like these little light sparks. But we don't have, and like, let me know, this was the wrong season for fireflies. And two, we really don't have fireflies here in Utah. Not unless it's like more in a marshy area, and this was the desert. So first off, wrong time, wrong area, and it was too dry for fireflies. And so it couldn't have been them. Plus fireflies kind of like when they light up, they almost make like a J shape. And this was just like a flash on, flash off, like sparkle. We would all sat there and we were just like, wait, look at that. Like, that's so cool. And as you peered through the trees out into the desert area, you'd almost see what looked to be maybe like I don't know, one, like 2-foot creatures possibly. Mm-hmm. And they weren't rabbits. They definitely looked humanoid, and it was hard to tell for me, like, is this mediumship I'm seeing through, or is this my physical eyes? But when everyone else was seeing it, and some of them weren't even mediums, that's when I was like, okay, this is physical eyes, like manifestation, whatever this is.
So then we decide to call it a night, and we start walking back. It's a straight shot. You cannot get lost. It's impossible to get lost, because you just turn around and you walk straight back, and then you hit the cemetery, and then you go down the hill.
It should have only been a 5-minute walk. And I think we've got walking maybe about 10, 12 minutes. And it's a straight line back. You can, so as we're walking back towards the fire from our home base, as we went south, you're just gonna go straight north and you line up with the mountain peak exactly. And, you know, there's no room for error because there's no mountains to the east, you know, not really to the west. And so it's a pretty easy straight line. It's hard to get lost, sort of thing. And so we start walking back, and it's taken us a while. We started going like, wait a second, we should be there by now.
I told Mary, I was like, Mary, we're lost. And she goes, no, we're going the right way. And I was like, no, we're lost, because we should have been back by now.
And so we check our phones, and we realize, wait, we're not going the right direction. How in the heck did that happen? Like, we're more towards the east than what we should be.
And at this point, we'd been walking about 20 minutes. Sarah pulled out her phone and we tried using her GPS, and something was messing with us, because the GPS, we walked in circles a few times.
So we corrected ourselves, started walking back. We had to backtrack a little bit and then go to the north in order to get back to the cemetery. So we were walking and we kept hearing extra footsteps with us, or extra scuffles. And I had mentioned it to Sarah at some point. I was saying, something's walking with us, but we couldn't figure out what until I had turned my head just a little bit further to the side than I was before. And I'd seen a man with almost like a brown old fashioned suit, a scuffy beard. He also looked very sickly. He had his eyes were very sunken in, his teeth were not taken care of at all. And I turned my head, seen him, and I just remarked, I see you. Why are you doing this? And then just kind of disappeared. So we kept adjusting ourselves, and we were like, why are we still not here? And we had realized we were slowly making our way in the wrong direction to the path where we had disturbed something the other night. Like, we were making our way to that road further and further each time, even though we were adjusting ourselves with our GPS. So finally, Sarah had pulled her phone out of her pocket.
And mine was the only GPS when I turned it on that worked. Everybody else's was directing them northeast up this mountain. So
that's when we realized something was manipulating my phone to the point where we were going in the wrong direction. So once we realized what's going on, we readjusted again.
But again, you have that visual look, let alone we had a visual of what direction we were walking. So each, as we're walking, we're all paying attention. Like, there's the mountain peak. We're all walking straight towards it. The fact that we somehow kept going off the wrong way. And it's funny, because as we were talking that night, sometime during the night before this happened, I remember talking about how we went on this fairy walk in Provo, Utah. He tells about how there's this area in Provo where as you're walking in one direction, and that happens to the students all the time, you actually like kind of like get a little lost when you know the area, and you almost end up going in the opposite direction than what you had planned on. And, you know, I was telling him how he talked about that, and how I said that actually does correlate with lore from the fairy world sometimes, where they cause you to get lost, even though you might know where you're going very much. And how the thing that they used to do way back then was like turn a piece of clothing inside out or whatnot to stop it. I said, well, and I kind of made fun and I laughed. I said, well, maybe we should turn some clothing inside out. And we did, or at least I did. I don't know if Sarah did or you did, but yeah. And after that, we finally made our way back.
It ended up what should have taken us 10, 15 minutes to get back to the cemetery probably took almost 45 minutes just to get back to the cemetery, where the paranormal girls have been going there for a while, so they know that place and they would get lost.
When Jen says the Fae, what she's talking about are magical beings that you hear about in old European lore. Things like pukas, fairies, leprechauns, elves, the Huldufolk, that kind of thing. The word Fae encompasses a lot more than that, but that's the Reader's Digest version. Fae are known to play tricks, and disorienting a group of unsuspecting humans is right in their wheelhouse. But they weren't just wandering. They were being drawn back to the dirt road where they disturbed that dark entity earlier. The one Jen described as ancient and Mary saw as some kind of regal presence, like a king. I asked Jen if she thought that the dark entity was the reason they were lost.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That was what was causing it. I think when Mary had seen that guy in a suit, it had sent him out to kind of lead us, you know, like even more astray towards where it needed to. But yeah, it was absolutely the reason why. It was crazy, but it was funny because it just like, I thought, well, you know, we've heard of this phenomenon happening and it's actually happening to us. Like, how is that? That's unreal. Because usually you hear a phenomenon, you don't get to experience it because sometimes it happens so rarely. So it was definitely interesting. I don't know if it would normally cause that or if it was just because we were interacting with Fae earlier, because that was not Fae, I can tell you that right now.
So maybe the dark entity did have something to do with it. And maybe the Fae did too. It's unclear, like most of the stories we tell on this show. And as Jen notes, clarity is scarce whenever the paranormal is concerned.
Who knows? I have so many questions. Usually when you have a paranormal experience, you end up walking away with more questions than what you started out with. Because you start thinking, well, what if, what if, what if? And no way to test it because, you know, the experience only happens once. There's no way to replicate it.
For listening, The Ghost Box is written, produced, hosted, and all the stuff by me, Dory Peacock, with scoring and mixing by Parker B. Abeg, who also composed our cool theme tune, which you heard in the intro and outro for the show. Special assistance was rendered by our four-legged production assistant, George Moosington Adams, Esquire, because of course my cat is a lawyer. I want to thank our special guests Sarah, Jesse, Jen, and Mary for sharing their stories. And if you want to hear more from Mary and Jen, there are some bonus episodes on our Patreon. Patreon is a site where you can donate a small amount of money each month to help keep the lights on for small creators like me. So if you're like, hey, I got too much money, I would like to support the Ghost Box and toss a coin in the box, as we say. Head over to patreon.com/theghostbox, all one word, and that will take you to our page. You can give us a little donation, and in return you will get some cool bonus episodes and hopefully more bonus content in the future. If you have a story that you would like to share with the show, email us at theghostboxpod@gmail.com or slide into our DMs on Twitter and Instagram at theghostboxpod. If you submit a story, we will get back to you if we think it's good for the show and maybe set up a recording. You can also find us on Facebook. Just go to Facebook and Google The Ghost Box or The Ghost Box Podcast, and wherever the sound of the wind makes the moan of an old coal miner, there we will be. Finally, if you like the show, rate and review on iTunes. It helps people find the show, or indeed on any podcast app where you listen. And if you didn't like the show, let me be the first to tell you in ASMR that you are wrong. It is a good show. You think you don't like it, but you do. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Stay spooky. Doop, 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 doop. Start again. The ghosts. Witness the ghost phenomenon. The actual. The is exactly what it says it is. Oh, damn it.
Yeah. I was like, they're all like, we're spending the night here. And I was like, I think I'm going home.